welcome to Transition State.
When the fever broke out.
standing there. Had you been there all along, said I'd been gone for days, just rambling. At times, not making sense. Things I should not have said. And you look like you'd seen a ghost. You were looking right at me. And if truth is a moving target, looks different from all sides. Where's the ground I can put my in my head, telling me lies again. Said you'd be heading south for winter. Maybe you're gone for good. Just because it was my voice, don't mean I had a choice. And if truth is a moving target, looks different from all sides. Where's the ground can put my feet on to keep it in my sight? And as you turned around, truth is a moving target, looks different from all sides. Where's the ground I can put my feet on to keep it in my sight? And if truth
that was Angela Inglis playing Moving Target from her album Echo. And before that, we heard Ammon Tobin's Easy Muffin from the album Bricolage. So welcome to Transition State, radio fans. I'm your host, as always, Adam. This is the show where we'll be talking about pharmaceutical know-how, so stay tuned. This week I sat down with a very special member of the UBC Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences student body, Miss Andrea Silver. So stay tuned for that exciting interview. But first we're going to hear some music. Here's Graftician, Ecstasy.
An ecstasy, I know you won't wait for me. Don't play fair or gracefully, but please, I still want my taste. An ecstasy, I know you won't stay with me. You don't fight fair or gracefully, but yes, I still have my taste. It's for forgetting what haunts me when I'm in rapture. And after I fall faster, don't hold back, I know that. An ecstasy coming down, I curse your name. Tried all of my tries to change, but please, I still have my taste for forgetting what haunts me when I'm in rapture. And after I fall faster, your touch was enough for today. Your touch was enough for today. Touch was enough for today, but tomorrow's coming after me, after me, after me. Ecstasy, come over me, give me grace, I need it, please. I don't hold back, I know that. Ecstasy, coming down, I curse your name. Tried all of my tries to change, but please, I still have my taste. It's for forgetting what haunts me when I'm in rapture. And after I fall faster, your touch was enough for today. But tomorrow's coming after me, after me, after me. Who will she be?
This is Julie Ferris from MOVE. You're listening to UBC Radio CITR FM 101.99.
Hey, this is Noah from Christ on Parade, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC, Canada.
And we're back. So now it's time for the interview portion of the show. This week I sat down with pharmaceutical science impresario Andrea Silver. Here's what she had to say. Okay, so welcome, Andrea.
Thank you.
I guess the first thing I'd like to ask you is, what got you into pharmacy?
Well, that's sort of a longer story, but I'll try to make it a little bit more concise. My dad owned a community pharmacy in Ottawa, and he really pushed the patient-centered care really hard in his pharmacy, and I just was so moved by the way he did that. And it was, you know, I saw a different side of my dad than I usually see at home, and just the way he cared for his patients and how, you know, even when a big chain pharmacy opened up down the street, he lost no business because of it, because of the way he treated his customers, and they felt like family, and you know, they really felt cared for. And that's sort of the direction that pharmacy is now going towards. But it was very rare back in, you know, the 80s and 90s, which is when he started practicing that way. So I kind of grew up with that notion of pharmacy already. I had, you know, most people at that age don't really experience pharmacy at all and don't really have much of a notion of what pharmacy is. A lot of my friends for example, that aren't in pharmacy don't really know much about pharmacy practice at all. So I was exposed to that at a younger age. Of course, when you're young and you're a teenager, you're always rebellious. So I was sure that, you know, despite respecting what my dad did, I definitely didn't see myself going in that direction. And so I actually went a completely different direction, and I went more the research side of things, and I was really driven by neuroscience research and, you know, cognitive development and addiction and, you know, all these, like, more psychosocial problems. With those still deep-seated ideals of patient-centered care and things like that. And then after I graduated from McMaster with those degrees, I kind of sat back and I was like, well, what am I going to do with this? Like, I couldn't imagine my life not working with patients, only working on subjects and with subjects and things like that. So for me, it kind of got me thinking afterwards, well, where do I really see myself working? And I really wanted to make a sort of difference the way that my dad did in people's lives. And then it kind of all fell together, and that's how I ended up choosing pharmacy. It was sort of an afterthought that I'm really glad that I eventually came to, but we all come to this in different ways. And that's what I like about pharmacy is that, you know, every person that you meet in the program or that has decided to go into becoming a pharmacist has totally different reasons for getting there. And that's why pharmacy is divulging into so many different directions now. It's no longer a chemistry degree. It's a personal care degree.
True. Okay, so let me just nail down a couple details. Your dad's pharmacy is where?
Was in Ottawa.
What's the name?
It was a PharmaSave. Oh, he started out as an IDA, and then he switched over once there was a corporate merger.
Oh, dear.
He didn't follow those ideals anymore, so he decided to go with PharmaSave, which is a different model of pharmacy entirely, in which, you know, the person that owns the individual PharmaSave is the manager and does not take orders from any upper management. It's their pharmacy, but they get to carry the name, the label, the recognized brand, that sort of thing.
And your first degree at McMaster was...
I did a double major for biology and psychology, and so you get neuroscience from that by doing an additional neuroscience labs, additional electives, and then a thesis at the end of it as well, a research thesis. So altogether, you graduate with an honors biology and psychology degree, but it's all together for neuroscience.
Neuroscience is pretty much sort of like the fence in between psychology, biology.
It's the biology of psychology.
Okay, so you're right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that reminds me of something tangential that I'd like to ask you right now. Do you ever think of maybe being a type of pharmacist who specializes in psychiatric disorders?
Absolutely. The difficulty there is that to work with psychiatric patients, the drug regimens are incredibly complex. Because really, neuroscience is a research-based faculty and notion. We don't really know a whole lot still. It's very young, and we're still learning so much. So to be treating psychiatric diseases is still very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a pharmacist to specialize in that population, you almost need a PharmD, which I'm not sure... I'm a little bit past the stage of going through.
No, please. Aren't you? So you're saying you're not sure if you want to commit to the education required?
Well, I'm not sure I want to do the PharmD, but I definitely see myself using my knowledge of neuroscience for other reasons. So you can do things, you can specialize without actually specializing, or you can do volunteer work that, you know, will utilize the knowledge that you have before. Knowledge is never a waste. By any means. So if I don't use it professionally, it doesn't mean I won't use it in my life.
Okay. Do you see sort of the need for a specialized pharmacy or a pharmacist who really understands?
I definitely do. And I see that being the direction that pharmacy is eventually going to go into, is that there's going to be, or at least that's what I hope. And I do think that is what's coming, just out of necessity alone. And we can get into that later. But the idea of a specialized pharmacist is really important, especially in psychiatric illnesses where there is so little that is actually known. Regular pharmacists are not necessarily equipped to deal with those issues. And so we definitely do need pharmacists that see these things over and over and over again and are prepared based by experience and current knowledge to help patients going through these things constantly. I definitely think that for those special populations, there needs to be a pharmacist that is specialized in that area, regardless of where they come from educationally or socially or anything.
Right, because I mean, a lot of people who become pharmacists have a lot of other school like you. But if you don't, then just the pharmacy program, not a lot of just straight biology and definitely not a lot of brain stuff.
Absolutely.
Psychology.
And, yeah, and the jargon that is used in psychiatric medicine is very difficult to surmount with just the basic pharmacy knowledge that we're given. Not saying that our education isn't comprehensive, it is, but because of its generalized knowledge, like, you have to get so much experience into each individual, like, it's impossible to do that in 4 years. Not the 4 years that we're structured at right now, anyway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you definitely need a lot more experience to specialize than just the basic pharmacy degree. Not that that's not an awesome start, but that's where continuing education comes in.
So what do you think about my idea, which is when I open my pharmacy, I really don't think I have that, you know, expertise, and I don't think I'm going to dispense psych meds.
At all?
Yeah. I feel like there's somebody better to do it.
Absolutely, and that's a really interesting point, because I do think that that is the way pharmacy is going to move, and it has to. And that is, currently, the current model of community pharmacy is, because pharmacies are struggling so much financially right now because of the myriad of reasons that that is happening, pharmacies are trying to cover all their bases and just trying to prescribe for every, or dispense for everything, provide advice on everything, you know, just so that they can get the business when they can get the business. But I think that where it's going to go, and this is where, you know, a lot of people say that there's a bleak outlook for pharmacy right now, especially students, because, you know, there's so many of us graduating and all this stuff. But I really think that what that is going to push the profession towards is specialties. So there's going to be pharmacies that are purely natural. And it'll be like little boutique pharmacies everywhere, purely psych meds, purely HRT or compounding, purely, you know, that's the way it should be. And then also, you know, the Costco's where it's like, you know, young people that just need to get in and get out. They've taken this medication before. It's not for a chronic illness. You know, I just need my birth control. Give me my birth control. Mm-hmm. I need my hypertension meds. I get what hypertension is already, you know? And so there is definitely a place for all these pharmacies. And I think that patients will get better patient-centered care by individualizing your pharmacy by a niche.
Okay, I think we see eye to eye.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll continue this in a second, but first let's hear some music.
Okay.
Says, why don't we go to a place that
Okay. Let's talk about your summer job.
Okay. So I actually just got this job. I'm so lucky. I have been in Nelson doing my placement for the summer, just for the month of June. And when I was there, I was offered a position to stay up there, and I was so excited about this. And then they kind of went back and forth on me. And I was prepared to move my whole life up to Nelson for the summer. That would be amazing. That would be so much fun. And the pharmacy I was working with was amazing. But they couldn't get me the hours that would make it worth it to pay rent in two cities. So I applied for some other jobs, and I ended up getting this job on my last day of my placement. So I got offered the job by Tamiz, who's our lab instructor in third year. And he runs a program in the lab using standardized patients. And at the moment, it's the only program that uses standardized patients in our pharmacy program. But as we move into the PharmD program, the Entry to Practice PharmD program, we are probably going to see an increase in that, because standardized patients, the literature is everywhere, is a very effective tool, and it increases student satisfaction and confidence really greatly compared to other ways of learning communication, patient interaction, those sorts of things. And it also allows you to practice giving advice without the potential harm of giving incorrect advice to an actual patient. So by using standardized patients or patient actors instead of using real patients that have the issues, there's a lower stake risk there. And so you learn how to do your counsel, you get feedback, you learn how to do it properly, you enhance your therapeutic skills, but really it's that communication that you're practicing and that you're really hoping to foster. And so we're looking into the effectiveness of standardized patient programs across the world. And we're looking at different ways to enhance the program for future years. We're also looking to increase the bank of standardized actors, which is something that it's sort of been flippantly done up till now. It's kind of trying to get the actors last minute, and it's, you know, they don't really have a good process for it. But the med school does. The med school has a huge patient bank and everything. So we're sort of trying to tap into that, trying to incorporate our program into the medical program, and trying to, you know, use some of their actors as well who have already been trained. So it kind of seems like a waste not to.
Okay. Now let's talk some science stuff, okay?
Okay.
You don't have to expand, just answer.
Okay.
Okay, so of all the drugs, what's your favorite drug?
Of all the drugs, it's my favorite drug.
So you're in the pharmacy and somebody comes in the prescription and you're like, oh, good, furosemide, my favorite.
It definitely wouldn't be furosemide. There's way too much to monitor with that one. Let me come back to that question.
You don't have a favorite drug? Okay, you don't play favorites?
I don't think so.
I'm all favorites. Maybe you won't get
what's
any of these questions
drug?
There. Oh, dear. Okay, well, do you have a favorite element? Of the chemical elements?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
I love all elements.
Okay, functional groups all equally?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's some cool functional groups, like imidazoles are really cool and like things like that, but yeah, no, I've never really thought of...
That's funny.
See,
for me, it's
all favorites.
You come
from a chemistry point of view. That's like, the difference. I come from the patient's point of view. I'm like, ooh, I love old men.
Okay. Andrea Silver does not play favorites. Okay, you do. Okay. All right, then let's talk about the future.
All right.
So where do you see... You already talked about sort of the future of the profession, what you think practice is going. So how are you going to fit into the future of pharmacy?
That's such a hard question to ask a student, and that's because you don't really know what opportunities are going to come your way. So...
Well, you're going into fourth year, so it's like right around the corner.
I know, but...
What are you going to do, say, your first year out?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to apply to the community residency program. And there's only two positions open for the 230 students that are in our class.
So what's the community residency program?
The community residency program is It's a structured program that, so every, for it's a full year, and each month of the year, you're placed in a different community setting. It could be an outpatient clinic at a hospital, it could be a pain clinic, like they're all very specialized, more advanced and unique practices out in the community. There's oncology rotations, there's rotations where you get to go to patients' homes after they've been discharged from hospitals and manage their medications to ensure continuity. There's compounding pharmacies, things like that. And so not only do you get to experience the unique niches that are already in place, but you get to see and really interact with the people who manage and run those niche placements. And so it'll give, it's not accredited the same way the hospital residency is. So that already weeds out a bunch of people because they want the accreditation, they want the letters at the end of their name. But to me, the real benefit to the program is the experiences that you get, the people that you get to meet, and the business side of things that you don't get as much exposure to in school. So that's what I'm hoping to get out of it. And so each month you do that. You don't have, and the reason it's not accredited is because they don't have, for our experiential rotations, they have, you know, a list of things that you must accomplish when you're there. In the community residency, they don't have that. They don't have a list of requirements that you must complete. They don't have, you know, specific presentations that you have to do. It's completely self-motivated. So you have to decide what you want to accomplish out of the program and then come back to it.
Okay, well, it sounds...
Parental controls.
It sounds like that's sort of... Like, it sounds like a really cool thing. But it sounds like it's for somebody who isn't quite sure what they want yet. Like, oh, let me try compounding. Oh, let me try... Oh, psych ward. Is that where you're at right now?
You do get to choose what rotations you want. They give you suggested rotations. But you do get to select the ones that you really want to do. So, for example, like I've already worked in compounding pharmacies. So that won't be as much of a learning experience for me. And probably not where I will end up. I wouldn't mind ending up in a compounding pharmacy. But you're right. Like, I don't really know where I want to be yet. I know that I want to specialize in something. I want to be in a niche place. I don't want to work at a 9-to-5 job, you know, at a regular pharmacy where, you know, especially in Vancouver, where you don't get to know your patients, you can't get to know the doctors. You know, I want to be in an area where I talk to the same doctors all the time, where they get to know me, where they grow confidence in me, in my recommendations, in my suggestions, in my monitoring, in my care for my patients. So that's why I don't know what I want to specialize in per se, but I have an idea of where I want to be within the community. So that's sort of where I see the benefit to the program. It's definitely not for everybody, so I don't think I'm going to be competing with 230 students.
Well, that would be bad news for them. Do you ever think of like taking over your dad's pharmacy?
My dad sold his pharmacy.
Oh, I thought he would save it for you.
That's funny. He sold it around the same time that I decided I might go into pharmacy. But what happened there was, we lived in Ottawa, so that's where his pharmacy was. And when my dad's mother passed away, they decided to move to Winnipeg to be with my mom's mom, who also needed some help. So they decided to sell the store so that they could move over there and just care for her and help her out. So.
Okay, that's understandable.
Yeah.
And do you think of opening your own pharmacy?
My dad always told me, he's like, don't buy a pharmacy. Don't own a pharmacy. I'll help you if you want to buy a pharmacy. But he thinks it's a lot more work than it's worth sometimes. That being said, there's a lot of money in buying a store and selling it again. But there, as long as you make improvements to it and develop a really good quality client base. But I don't necessarily, like, I'm not very business minded. I hate the idea of money, and I can't imagine diluting my role as a patient caregiver with the need you need to create a profit. You absolutely need to. So I would need somebody else to do all of that for me, and that just kind of defeats the purpose of me owning a pharmacy in the first place. I'd much rather work somewhere and then have a whole other set of time where I could go and enjoy the rest of the things that I love doing, like camping and traveling and music festivals and things like that.
All right.
So if you want to hire me at your pharmacy, you let me know.
I probably would. But the thing is that other than the money, which, yeah, no doubt. You know, as the owner, you get to call the shots. You get to make decisions.
If you're a respected
employee, how to operate.
Okay, so that's true in a way. But when you're a pharmacist, you're a professional, and every pharmacist that works at a store is a manager. Like, they have to be. They manage the store when the owner is not there. And so, yeah, you don't call all the shots because the person that calls the shots has to drive a profit. So that's where those decisions are coming from. But if you're a respected person within that store or community or whatever you're working in, then your ideas will be taken into account as long as they're reasonable. So, you know, if I decide to tell you at your store, I'm like, well, you know, we need to spend more time with patients. We have to take an hour for every med review. You know, all these things. Great patient care. Totally makes sense. Financially possible? Feasible? No, not really. So we need to find a balance there. So you can't just make suggestions and expect the manager to agree with them. You have to create alternatives. So you can't just say, you know, we should do this. We can do this and make it profitable and make it sustainable by doing this. And that is something that I'd be really interested in doing too, like consulting pharmacies on how to integrate cognitive services and patient care services in a financially sustainable way.
To me. If you want to stay, don't stand to me. If you like the way, don't stand to me. Don't know. Well, don't explain now. Don't explain, don't explain, don't explain now. Don't explain, don't explain, don't explain now. Don't explain, don't explain, don't explain. Don't know. Each time you go, don't you know? Yeah.
If you want to go,
well, if you wanted to go,
don't explain it to me. to me.
If you want to stay.
If you want to stay.
Don't explain to me.
Oh. Don't explain, don't explain, don't explain now. I complain, I complain.
Steps. That's the recommended daily minimum for a healthy, active person. Easy, right? The average office worker takes only 3,000 steps a day. Enter Steptember. Challenge yourself, your co-workers or your classmates to walk, run or roll your way to 10,000 steps a day for 1 month, all for a good cause. Every step you take this September is a step towards supporting cerebral palsy associations across Canada.
In Indigenous cultures across the globe, women are givers and creators of sacred life. They nurture and shape our children. They influence future generations through the early interactions and teachings they pass on to our youth. These transfers of knowledge are in grave danger as women are common victims of violence, especially in communities where extractive industries are taking place. Violence against Indigenous women and children is one of the most serious violations of human rights, and Indigenous people have to work as equal partners with states to develop standards and mechanisms to enforce women's rights, strengthen their civic and political participation, and protect them from the different forms of violence they are commonly subjected to. We need to bring the issue of violence against women to light and work to uncover the extent of this problem so that we can seek the needed resources to put an end to this grave injustice towards Indigenous women. This series shares the concepts and recommendations contained in the ALTA outcome document. For more information, visit WCIP2014.org.
Okay, and we're back here with the mighty Andrea Silver. Andrea, why do they call you the mighty?
You're the only one that calls me the mighty. Except for one friend that calls me Mighty Mouse.
Okay, I want to transition now from the science into music.
Okay.
So, I know last summer you were involved in quite a few music festivals. Are you doing that this summer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm heading over to Philip's Backyard Weekender this weekend. And then in August, I'll be working at Squamish Music Festival.
Okay. Tell us about this Phillips Weekender.
Ooh, Phillips Weekender is so much fun. So Atami Productions is a really great production company in Victoria. They put on shows all year long, and they also put on a number of festivals, usually daytime festivals, which is really good because it increases access to, you know, families and, you know, people that can't really or don't like camping or just can't get away for full weekends. So the Backyard Weekender is Phillips Brewery transforms their loading dock in the back of the brewery into a stage. And this year they've actually expanded the area even more. They've bought the lot next door. They're increasing into the street. They're closing down the whole street behind it. Like, it's really becoming huge. It's really great. Every year they almost sell out, or if they don't sell out, at least one of the nights usually sells out. And this year they've got people like the Funk Hunters, the original Wailers, Bob Marley's old band, Sally to Dublin, all these people.
Can you confirm a fact for me? I heard that Bob Marley's wife was in the Wailers.
I cannot confirm that fact, but I think it's probable.
Ask them maybe and find out.
Okay, I'll ask them for you.
And then what's this Squamish Music Festival?
Squamish Music Festival, yeah. So that one's huge. That's a really big festival. Huge names this year. Tribe Called Red is coming. Eminem is going. Nas will be there. Topless Gale of Techno Party, which is one of my favorite shows to go to all the time. They're amazing. Always lots of sparkles at those shows. Walk Off the Earth. those guys that played five people and one guitar to do the Gautier cover.
I missed that.
Gautier?
Five people on one guitar?
Five people on one guitar. Oh, I'll have to show you the YouTube video.
Two people. Okay.
Five people. Five.
All right. Okay. Like, are some of them just holding the guitar?
No, they're all like doing stuff. It's crazy. I'll show you.
I could see two hands.
Oh, you're gonna. People are playing percussion.
On the guitar?
Oh, on the guitar?
Oh yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The guitar.
Yeah,
is also
it's
a
really
drum.
Cool.
Okay. True or false? Music is a drug.
True.
Definitely.
Oh, absolutely. The way it affects the brain, absolutely.
Okay. True or false? You can do anything with music.
True.
Okay. True or false? You can cure cancer with music.
Debatably true.
Debatable?
If you can cure cancer by praying, by meditating, by wishing and hoping, and by caring for others, then you can definitely cure it with music.
I agree. And plus, sometimes you can bombard the tumor with sound waves. They do
there
that.
You go. Yeah, so that's it. They do. Okay.
What kind of music do you like?
My taste in music changes, like, all the time. It's crazy. I sometimes think I'm, you know, schizophrenic with my music. But I go through, like, waves of really enjoying different types. So I've been in a deep house wave for a while because it's really great to study to. And it's great for road trips. But I'm going through a transition again now, and I'm really into, like, hip-hop and rap again, which is kind of funny. But I love folk music. I love rock and roll, good old rock and roll. The only music I don't really love is, I don't love country. There's country that I don't hate, for sure.
Okay.
But it's not my favorite genre by any means. It's not up there. And sometimes it makes me a little ragey. And surprisingly, sometimes I grew up playing the piano, but listening to classical music sometimes really makes me a little ragey too. I don't really know why. I don't have a really good reason. Like, sometimes I really enjoy it, but it's very few and far between. And if it comes on and I'm not expecting it, like, just Hulk.
Do you ever go to the, like, the student concerts at the Chan Center? The classical music?
No.
Wow. Yeah, really good stuff.
I imagine if I was at a show or at a concert with classical music, like, I love playing piano, and I would play a lot of classical music. And I love the feeling of being surrounded by music, and classical music literally, like, grabs into your soul and lifts you up. Like, it's amazing. But just, for example, I love listening to CBC Radio 2 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Love it. But at 9 o'clock, they start playing classical music, and it's like, ugh!
Okay.
Off.
Okay, yeah. It's more about the experience. And the Chan Center is super nice,
oh,
right?
It's gorgeous. And the acoustics in there are absolutely phenomenal. Like, you know, we should go.
Oh, yeah. And not only that, like, the performers, like, they dress up. And their instruments are always so nice, too. Like, ooh, here we go. Like, very classy.
I know.
Very. And they have the ritual, too. It's always highly ritualized. And they're like, oh, no, like this. Over here, violins over here. It's so good. I think, yeah, the experience, yeah. More than just the sound, right?
Yeah, you're right. And it I see it opening minds, and, like, really, like, it's such an experience. Like, afterwards, it's like, did you watch the movie Her?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, that movie, like, you know, you're just sort of reeling afterwards, and your whole mind is just, like, awake and engaged and just, like, I need to explore my mind right now. I don't need to explore the internet. I have no desire to look at Facebook. You know, it's just like, I need to go explore. And that's how I feel the experience of classical music is. But I would never put it on my radio.
Okay. So, you know, campus radio is devoted to certain types of music. First of all, sort of music that represents our community. And also preference for Canadian content, feminine content, and non-hits, right? So, can I ask, do you like music that would fit into those categories?
Absolutely. Some of the best music comes out of Canada. I still believe that. We have amazing musicians here. And that is always such a point of pride. And that's why I love going to music festivals as well, because you hear all the sounds from across the country. I mean, really, we have cultures across the country. It's amazing. Also, women's music, completely different. And it's just, it's so nice to hear. It's kind of like hearing strings, like unexpected strings and like, you know, a rock song or like the sax and deep house and things like that. Like the sound of a woman's voice coming through is absolutely beautiful. Like July Talk is really big right now, and they've got like this Tom Waits meets Metrix thing going on, and it's just like, what is even happening? It's crazy.
Don't ask a question, don't see my trust. You don't look pretty when you smile, so don't smile at all. You love me like a doctor, or stun run with a broken leg. You're a paper girl with paper eyes. You're a paper crowd. And if you think it's your turn to ask a question, it's not.
If you want money and you're comfy, if you want secrets in your tea, keep your paper heart away from me.
Well, it must be hard to be a pretty girl. Yeah, it must be hard to watch your body growing old. And I'll be laughing in your head until I wanna stop. And if you think it's your turn to explain yourself, it's not.
Paper Girl by July Talk. Before that, we heard a cool band called Hunter's Night. That was some nice electric guitar fuzz, so thanks to Hunter's Night for that. The track was Don't Explain. And before that, we also heard Okra, the Slaves folk song, which I thought was awesome. Good job, Okra. We're going to leave you with one more track. This is actually Chromeo, so special thanks again to Andrea Silva for being with us this week. And until next week, stay cool out there, Radio Land, and stay pharmaceutically aware.
You're a sexy socialite. All you do is socialize. And you're always so polite. And your outfits tantalize. When you want to spend the night, all you do is roll your eyes. They crush on you.
Ooh, they crush on you.
Yeah. You're a sexy socialite. All you do is socialize. And you're always so polite.
You.
You're out alone, so young.
Anti-capitalist, all ages, DIY, feminist music festival by and for people of color, gay, trans, queer, indigenous people, and women. Shoutback is celebrating its third year smashing patriarchy, full weekend of workshops, live music, and for the first time, an all-day anarchist book fair taking place on unceded post-sales territories on August 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th, 2014.
Vancouver's original Latin Summer Festival is on August 17th at Trout Lake. Joy, fun, and food for families and folks of all ages. Latin-style dance celebrations all day include dance floors, DJs, bands, dancers, and exciting demos at our community booths. Come early, stay late, just off the Nanaimo SkyTrain stop. For more information, go to latinsummerfest.com.
This week on the Arts Report, film, theater, dance, books, visual art, and more. Every Wednesday at 5 p.m., the Arts Reporters explore what's fun, fascinating, campy, or critical in the Vancouver art scene. You can find bonus content on our Mixcloud, Facebook, and Twitter. Got an idea for a review, interview, or original production? Email arts@citr.ca. Listen Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or anytime on citr.ca.
Who are you to comment on who I am? What the fuck, man? Fucking prick. Oh, yeah? Since when? Who the fuck are you, fool? You'll see. Fucking coward. You're a fucking hater. Fuck out of here. Enjoy hating, you prick. Oh, good, you fucking idiot. You fucking with the wrong guy. Sucks to be you. Better watch yourself. Real talk.
Beaver Hour, Tuesdays at 11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time with your host, Emma Rawson.
Rawson. Rawson. Rawson.
Never know where you see best, still find time for my own ghosts. I see I was born just yesterday, and I try to tell my